Honors, and please support. This case presents the issue of whether Mr. Pimentel-Lopez can have an order reinstated against him when the underlying proceedings amounted to a complete denial of his due process rights. Mr. Pimentel-Lopez is a native and citizen of Mexico. He was born in 1980, and he initially entered the United States in 1998 without inspection. He was issued a notice to appear by the Department of Homeland Security in August of 1998, and that was served upon him. Now, the initial notice to appear did not have a date or time set for his immigration hearing. The Executive Office of Immigration Review subsequently issued two notices of hearing, which were supposed to advise.
So let me ask you a few questions that give you some concerns about your position here.
Yes, Your
Honor. So as I understand that we're dealing with a reinstatement order, is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And we have jurisdiction to review a reinstatement order, but the scope and extent of our review is limited, correct?
That's true, Your Honor.
It is. We only look at the three critical factors that the immigration officer used to issue the reinstatement order, right?
Your Honor, there is also a narrow circumstances in which the underlying removal order can be collaterally attacked. And that would be under circumstances where the underlying proceedings amounted to a due process violation, which was a gross miscarriage of justice. And that's under Garcia de Rincon versus DHS.
So your position is that you have to show there is a gross miscarriage of justice in order for us to review that question, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And the claim here is that in that original proceeding, she didn't get notice.
He did not get notice. That's correct. He didn't receive notice of any of the immigration hearings.
But we don't have any of the records here, the official records from the BIA. We don't know. There's no evidentiary records of how we know that.
Well, the reason we can surmise it is that neither of the notices.
Surmise doesn't do much good for you.
Right. Well, the problem in this circumstance is that he was never given a hearing where he could have created an evidentiary record. And that is the circumstance.
Why didn't you file a motion to reopen?
Well, the reason why we couldn't file a motion to reopen is that it's barred under 8 U.S.C. Section 1231, subsection A5, which states that a motion has been reinstated against the immigrant cannot be reopened. And so,
pardon me, let me see if I've got these dates right. He was given a notice to appear that proceeded before the immigration court on February 4th, 1999. That was when he was supposed to appear. Right?
That's correct, Your
Honor. That's also going to get that motion, that notice.
Correct.
He was removed physically 8 days later on February 12th.
Yes, sir.
He had until March 4th, 1999, to raise the issue of lack of notice. Did he not? That 30 days. That was the final order of removal. That's the one that ordered him removed. Not the reinstatement, but the order of removal that ordered him removed was entered on February the 4th, 1999. He had 30 days in which to appeal that order, and he suddenly knew that something was up because he was physically removed.
Oh, okay, I understand, Your Honor. Yes, he was removed on February 12th, 2019.
Yeah, he had until March 4th to challenge that lack of notice.
Unfortunately, he did not, because at that time the law was such that once he was removed, he was barred by the general rule stating that once you're removed, you no longer have jurisdiction in the immigration court to bring a motion to reopen. And there's also a case that states that bringing a motion to reopen is the sole means of challenging an in absentia order.
And what's your authority for that legal?
Which one?
You know what you said? There's no jurisdiction to challenge because when you've been removed?
There's a bunch of cases that hold that, but they're collected in the case Bolnes, Nolasco, and it's an INA case from 2009. And that case actually carved out an exception for in absentia orders, but it was not in effect at the time that Mr. Pimentel-Lopez was removed in 1998.
Thank you.
So the other problem with the underlying proceedings beyond simply the notices of hearing, which Mr. Pimentel-Lopez didn't receive, is that the order also failed to state the exact grounds on which he was removed.
They corrected it.
They did correct it, Your Honor, although...
In 2013,
that's correct, Your Honor, but Mr. Pimentel-Lopez was not served with the notice of the motion to... or he wasn't served correctly by the department with the notice of the motion to amend the original judgment or order. And so Mr. Pimentel-Lopez's position is that that correction should not be counted against him since he also didn't receive notice, proper notice to challenge that reopening of that issue. And he would have opposed it, amending the order on the grounds that he didn't receive notice originally of the proceedings that resulted in that order being lodged against him. As we just discussed, he was removed on February 12, 1999, only 8 days later. And he re-entered the United States shortly thereafter. He was eventually detained in 2013 on a death charge, which was later dismissed. After he was originally removed, he's now spent over 10 years in the United States. His wife was a Bosnian refugee and a daughter who is about 10 years old. And there are substantial equities in allowing him to remain in the United States. And in fact, if proceedings were reopened, he would be eligible for cancellation or removal for certain non-permanent residents, as his family would experience extreme.
The government entertaining any kind of discretionary?
Your Honor, while...
These days? These days, does the government entertain?
Well, it's actually the Executive Office of Immigration Review would have authority over it, and immigration judges do grant it. So it's under...
trying to work out some sort of settlement.
So we did counsel for Mr. Pimentel-Lopez in his slot, so I did approach ICE and request that the case be reopened because of the issues with notice. And I stated that they would not join in the motion to reopen the proceedings, which could have been a way to potentially get around the bars, the statutory bars, to reopening the proceedings.
You want to save some time for rebuttal?
Yes, sir.
May I please support Matt Grape on behalf of the government? Petitioners filed a petition for review of a reinstatement order that reinstates a previous executed order of removal, but he does not raise any challenge to that reinstatement order. Instead, he invites the court to review his underlying order of removal entered 18 years ago.
But we do have jurisdiction to review that petition.
You do have jurisdiction to review the reinstatement order, of course.
Right.
Correct. But he cannot obtain review of the underlying order that was entered 18 years ago.
What do you do with our case that we call it a Garcia?
That case recognized
the court. I think I mispronounced the case name. It's Garcia de Rincon.
That case did not deal with the 30-day time limit for the underlying order, but it recognized that this court has always held that there was a gross miscarriage of justice exception, perhaps. But it
seems to say that very directly.
Well, it does say that very directly, but it didn't actually find that in that case. And I'm unaware of any case where this court has actually found that gross miscarriage of justice.
It seems to recognize it.
Absolutely. But this isn't that case.
Suppose this record here demonstrated that the petitioner did not actually receive notice.
Yes.
In the underlying proceeding.
Then he should file a motion.
Just say that. Here we have his declaration that he files in our court. Essentially, is what he does. We can't consider.
Right.
But let's suppose that it was in the record somehow, maybe he wrote a letter or something that
administrators or documents that he didn't actually receive notice of the original removal proceedings. Would that amount to a gross miscarriage of justice?
Perhaps. But I would suggest simply that in order for that to be in the record, he should have raised it and exhausted it.
I was
just asking you whether that situation would amount to a gross miscarriage of justice. That's all I'm asking.
If he had no notice?
No notice. And what's painful, but wouldn't that sort of offend notions of fairness and due process?
I'm not aware of any case law that holds that, but I would suggest, I would understand that
definitely
could.
Well, it's a breach.
I think it could.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. You know, it wouldn't be fair that he didn't have notice of his hearing, or that he's already removed.
We have a record here that doesn't demonstrate that.
We don't have a record that demonstrates that. And in fact, his record that he appends to his brief is basically, in essence, what he would file in a motion to reopen and rescind an in absentia order before the agency, which he should have done. And that's the only avenue of relief for him here. He can't raise that with this court.
Did he file a motion to reopen?
No, I don't believe he has ever filed a motion to reopen with the immigration court.
But he could. I mean, well, he could, but could they entertain it?
I believe so, yes.
Or would they say, no, it's automatically, you can't do this?
No, I don't believe they would, because, A, the statute says that if your motion to reopen is based on a lack of notice, you can raise it at any time. Any time. B, or secondly, the board itself in Bolnes, in the last one in 2009, they recognized that there's no departure bar or any other bar for in absentia orders based on a lack of notice, because the board held that if you didn't get notice of your hearing, the original removal order is a nullity in itself.
So you don't agree with your learned friend that he couldn't have appealed the order of removal of February 4th, 1999, in 30 days?
I would say that he could have filed a petition for review within 30 days, but the government would have said that he hadn't exhausted his administrative remedies. The only avenue for him to challenge an in absentia order is to file a motion to reopen and rescind with the immigration judge himself.
So do you agree or do you not agree with your opponent that him being out of the country, having been removed, this court lacks jurisdiction?
I don't believe that. His removal doesn't affect this court's jurisdiction.
Does the removal affect the immigration court's jurisdiction?
No, not if the motion to reopen is based on a lack of notice. And the board has recognized that at least since 2009. And that, you know, he could have raised that argument.
Minimum, it's worth a good shot.
At a minimum, yeah, absolutely. And in fact, if he had filed the evidence that he's put before this court with the immigration judge, I don't know. And the government hasn't had an opportunity to respond to that, and there hasn't been any finding or a record developed where we can.
You don't agree with him that rule allowing a motion to reopen for lack of notice of the original immigration hearing did not exist prior to 2009.
I don't agree. I don't think the board was. The board in Bolnes, Alaska, was basically stating the law. You know, I don't think they were making a change in law or overturning a prior understanding. They were simply stating the law as it is, or and always has been. And I think the board made a reasonable conclusion that, you know, if he had never had notice, his original removal order was a nullity to begin with because it had denied him the opportunity to appear and contest his removal. I would remind the court of its decision in Morales v. Cuierto, which seems to control this case almost identically, because in Morales' Cuierto, it was a reinstatement order. The alien in that case argued that he didn't have notice of his underlying removal order that was reinstated. And this court held that or denied that petition for review because they held that the alien should not be permitted to gain a right or a privilege by illegally reentering the country. And in fact, that any due process concerns were alleviated by the fact that a reinstatement doesn't impose any new civil or criminal penalty on the alien.
But in Morales-Cierro, the court, we also said that we left open the possibility that individual petitioners may raise procedural defects in their particular cases. Is it correct to notice not a procedural defect?
It was in that case.
It was not in that case. My position is it was not in that case.
No, I think that actually the petitioner in Morales-Izquierdo complained of a lack of notice.
I think we're on the same line. He did complain, the court considered it, and the court denied it.
Fair enough. but the bottom line is that the court recognize that the reinstatement isn't an opportunity to give the alien a chance to go back, whatever due process concerns he raises.
Morales is scared though, didn't deal with the 1252. This is very, it's very
A5D.
Oh, A2D,
the constitutional question of law.
You didn't address that, and that's what we recognized in Garcia de Rincon.
That's true. But A2D doesn't officiate, it doesn't alleviate the 30-day time limit that's also in 1252. That's the cases we cite in our brief. The Third Circuit, the Tenth Circuit, the Eleventh Circuit, the Fourth Circuit has now held or recognized that A2D doesn't alleviate the 30-day time limit in 1252b1.
I went to one or two of those cases, but I don't recall that they actually have in those circuits a case similar to Garcia de Rincon.
Right. But on the other hand, the exhaustion requirement is what I would come back to, which is in 1252d1, which requires him to exhaust his administrative remedies, and the board has made clear that the sole exclusive means of challenging an in absentia order based on lack of notice is through a motion to reopen with the immigration judge. And that would, permit him to develop a record and give the agency a chance to correct its own mistakes. So for prudential reasons and for everything else, he's inviting this court to rule on a motion to reopen. He's presented evidence here, which you should reject his invitation to engage in fact-finding and deny the petition for review.
Thank you, counsel.
I just want to address a couple of issues raised by opposing counsel. The first is that the motion to reopen is speculation that a court would find that in a case of an in absentia order, the prohibition on attacking an underlying removal order is barred with motion to reopen under 8 U.S.C. subsection 1231A5 will be waived. We have no indication that that's the case. The other problem with a motion to reopen.
So the government says that it sounds like you would be well served to at least try to file a motion to reopen.
Well, the other issue is, it's true that it is possible. Well, I don't believe that a court would find.
Don't be so hesitant. I mean, go forward and make your best arguments. Give it a shot.
Well, so the two problems are, first of all, it's not clear that the immigration court has jurisdiction. The other problem is that a motion to reopen is discretionary.
No harm in asking.
Decision. There is a harm to the petitioner, which is that he has to go through the expense of, preparing this motion to reopen with the immigration court, and he's a man with a family, and it does represent a hardship for him to have to go through this extra proceedings when there's no really indication that there is jurisdiction in the immigration court, or that immigration court would exercise its discretion in granting such a motion. And I don't think that a remedy where it's not clear that there's jurisdiction.
And you think that
and it's
sending this matter all the way to the Ninth Circuit is more efficient than getting it to the
top? Well, it's more efficient than starting with the Immigration Court, going to the BIA, and then going to the Ninth Circuit before there is judicial review of due process and constitutional claims in the underlying proceedings.
Isn't there some pretty fundamental rules that apply to what we can actually consider and not consider?
That's true, and one of the rules is that in a case under 1252A2D, the Ninth Circuit has jurisdiction as far as
the administrative record.
In terms of the administrative record. With the administrative record, I understand that there's not as much in it as we would like,
but there's nothing on this point.
Right.
Isn't that true?
Well, if you just include the record of the reinstatement hearing, that is correct. But if you include the record as including the proceedings and the underlying removal order, then there's enough to raise questions as to whether Mr. Pimentel Lopez ever received any notice of the underlying removal order.
Okay, thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The next case for argument is Picasa Hernandez versus Sessions.